You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, folks, things are getting hot here. Apparently, we are ruffling someone's feathers. I'm not going to tell you what's going on, but I will tell you this. I'm sitting here with a 9mm pistol by my side, and we have taken steps to protect the family. Last night, I told you that the seeds are still open. $48 for listeners and $40 for CAGI members. And we also brought out two other offers. The pantry, 3 months for one person, or 1.5 months for two people. It's four cases. Shipping weight is 87 pounds. Remember, whenever you order this stuff, you pay freight upon delivery. The retail price of the pantry unit, 3 months for one person, is $380. $380. For listeners to the Hour of the Time, the price is $300, and for CAGI members, $290. Let me tell you that again. The retail price is $380. For listeners to the Hour of the Time, the price is $300. For CAGI members, $290. We also did the emergency unit. We'll feed one person for 1 month. The retail price is $213, and I believe we brought it down to $290 for listeners and $280 for CAGI members. So that will remain open as long as we are doing the reruns while we are moving into the new research center, folks. And make sure that you take advantage of it. The seeds are a fantastic bargain. These other two offers are also fantastic bargains. To feed one person for 3 months for $300 or $290, dehydrated food is nitrogen-packed in enameled cans is a fantastic bargain. If you can find it cheaper somewhere else, I recommend that you get it. But let us know where it's cheaper and send us their official price list so that we can compare. And anytime you can do anything like that, we'll always try and see what we can do. But we're rock bottom as it is. So take advantage of it. The address is Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, spelled S-H-O-W-L-O-W, Arizona, 85901. That's P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. If you listen at the end of this broadcast, the address will be repeated again. Please make all checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard,
authorities are investigating Clinton's involvement in these loans. The April 3, 1986, Small Business Administration loan by Capital Management for $300,000 to Mrs. McDougal, routed to her company, Master Marketing. $110,000 of this money is believed to have been routed into Whitewater. The loan, of course, ladies and gentlemen, was never repaid. A February 28, 1986 SBA loan by Capital Management for $150,000 to Castle Sewer and Water, which involves Tucker and others, also never repaid. Castle Sewer and Water also defaulted on more than $860,000 in Madison loans. Again, never repaid. An October 3, 1987 SBA loan by Capital Management for $150,000 to South Loop Construction Corporation, Tucker's company. Guess what? Never repaid. A February 21, 1986 SBA loan by Capital Management for $65,000 to the communications company in Fayetteville, Arkansas, owned by Steve Smith, Clinton's former aide. The firm's purpose was to manage Democratic political campaign. Now, who could that be? It declared bankruptcy in 1992 and defaulted on the loan. Again, never repaid. It was this same Mr. Smith who approved Kingston Bank's $30,000 loan to Hillary that the FDIC demanded the Clintons repay, and it was repaid, but with another loan. A January 10, 1986 SBA loan by Capital Management for $149,000 to Campobello Realty, James McDougal's and Chris Wade's venture, never repaid. These SBA loans were supposed to go to minority business owners who could not obtain financial and other assistance, but Clinton's officials required them to use the money, and they leased the space from McDougal. This was done, folks, at a cost of more than $5,300 a month for 2 years, according to federal law enforcement sources. Investigators want to know whether the lease was inflated to allow for the $2,000 a month retainer for Mrs. Clinton. Five other building owners had submitted lower bids to house the ADFA in better locations, but they were passed over at the insistence of Bill Clinton for McDougal. Remember, folks, this comes from the research of CAGI members, the research of myself, William Cooper, and a man named Nick Guarino. Now we come to some of the real meat of the matter, the Clintons and their bond and drug dealers. The Clintons' association with bond and drug dealer Dan Lassiter began in 1979 at the Oak Lawn Racetrack in Hot Springs, Arkansas, where Bill's mother, Mrs. Kelly, had a box next to his. Lassiter was the founder of the Ponderosa Steakhouse chain. He was very wealthy by the time he met Mrs. Kelly and Clinton's half-brother, Roger. The racetrack friendship soon blossomed into an introduction to Clinton, who was trying to regain the governor's mansion after losing the November 79 election and having money troubles. It was his association with the Clintons that spurred him to open a bond trading firm. Lassiter gave Roger Clinton a job and Bill Clinton major campaign contributions. Bill added Lassiter and Company to the exclusive list of firms eligible to underwrite state bond issues. This classification generated millions in dollars of business for the firm. Lassiter contributed huge sums to Clinton's ongoing political campaigns, sponsored lavish drug parties at his office, paid off Roger Clinton's drug debts, encouraged his staff to donate to Clinton, promising higher commissions to compensate them for their expense, and frequently flew Bill around the country in his private jet. Clinton, dear listeners, for his part, sent Lassiter lucrative bond contracts for the state of Arkansas. Bond issues were one of Clinton's main vehicles for patronage and largesse for him and his cronies. Most of these bonds were issued through the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, which bundled local bond issues to make them more attractive to buyers. ADFA was created in 1985 by Mr. Clinton to expand the state's authority to issue tax-exempt bonds to develop property in Arkansas. investment bankers in the state, and a former ADFA official involved in government bond contracts say it was common knowledge that companies headed by political supporters of Mr. Clinton received favored status for government awards, including business loans through ADFA bond issues. In a letter to the FBI, the former official said that many of the ADFA's bond sales were intended, quote, as political favors or repayments for campaign support, unquote. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, if you wanted an ADFA bond issue, you play ball with Bill Clinton, and some of your money had better go into his campaign fund. These ADFA bonds were the height of cronyism. Clinton and his friends were able to use them to loot over $1 billion with a B, and now we're getting to the real money, $1 billion with a B dollars from investors. Many of these so-called public project bonds were nothing but shams. They are almost guaranteed to default, leaving thousands of investors with huge losses, and where is the money? Where, dear listeners, is the money? Doing the complex legal work and sending the bonds to market was a bonanza for law firms and underwriters. Hillary's firm got much of the legal work on these bonds. One such contract was the 1985 bond issue to pay for the Arkansas police radio system. Ironically, it was this system which was later used to bust Lassiter on drug charges. Clinton got the Arkansas legislature to approve a contract for Lassiter to sell $30.2 million in the bonds. The contract netted Lassiter $750,000. Lassiter also has passed sweetheart bond deals for the Arkansas Housing Development Agency, AHDA, which awarded millions of dollars in tax-exempt bonds. Altogether, the firm received $1.6 million in brokerage fees for two dozen separate tax-exempt bond issues. Representative James Leach of the House Banking Committee is expected to widen his probe of the Whitewater-Madison affair to include these bond deals. Quote, what you have is a picture of Milken-esque economic entanglements in microcosm in the state of Arkansas, unquote, said Leach. These sweetheart deals continued while Lassiter and two of his partners were under investigation for cocaine distribution. Lassiter later was sentenced to 30 months in prison. Although Bill Clinton had personal use of Lassiter's private jet and was rumored to have attended Lassiter's parties, where cocaine sometimes appeared like a blizzard in a veil, as usual, Bill was completely uninvolved and had no knowledge whatsoever. Don't know nothing about no drug parties, don't know nothing about no jet, don't know nothing about no savings and loans, didn't get no money from Whitewater. No knowledge. And, of course, folks, he certainly did not inhale. Even after Lassiter was sentenced to prison, the bond issues continued to flow to his firm. Patsy Thomason, who is presently on Clinton's staff at the White House, was made executive vice president at Lassiter's firm. She was given power of attorney to run the company in his absence. She handled $664 million in Arkansas bond contracts for him. Ms. Thomason is now a Clinton aide at the White House. Where else would she be? Now, why would Lassiter give power of attorney to a Clinton aide if he wasn't Clinton's surrogate all along? I know Clinton's name isn't on it, but he was clearly the one with the power. The Lassiter story would die here, folks, except it gets even more intriguing when you find out how Hillary and her partners at the Rose Law Firm tie into all this. And later, we'll get to a little airstrip in a town called Mena. It's similar to her long-established pattern. The banking officials hire her to sue Lassiter. She fails to disclose her friendship with him or his role as benefactor to her husband. She negotiates a secret out-of-court settlement for far less than the government could have expected to receive. But first, some background. You see, Lassiter's bond trading firm expanded its business beyond Arkansas. He signed deals to trade Treasury bond futures with several savings and loans, including First American Savings and Loan in Oak Brook, Illinois, and Home Federal Savings and Loan in Centralia, Illinois. First American lost at least $361,572 in those T-bond futures trades. Dan Walker, president of First American and a former governor of Illinois, sued Lassiter for unauthorized trading. They had general authority to trade, said Walker, but they were supposed to call us each time they made a trade, and they did not do that. Walker also alleged that Lassiter's firm committed mail, wire, and securities fraud in the unauthorized trades. His suit never made it to court, however. Walker himself was charged by federal officials of lending himself $1.4 million in federally insured deposits. He was eventually convicted of bank fraud and perjury. Federal regulators seized First American. The FSLIC decided to pursue the $3.3 million suit that Walker began against Lassiter. Of course, they hired the Rose Law Firm. Who else? And the suit was assigned to, guess who? Hillary Clinton. And guess who else, folks? It gets even better. Vincent By God Foster, who later became Deputy White House Counsel for Clinton and who was found dead last July. Hillary and Foster negotiated a confidential settlement. The result? Lassiter paid the government $200,000 in return for a dismissal of the $3.3 million suit. No charges were filed, and he walked away scot-free. Now, it shouldn't take a professor of legal ethics to tell you that Hillary's role in this suit is sleazy. She should have immediately excused herself on grounds of conflict of interest, but as you saw in the previous two programs, she's not in the habit of doing that. Hillary's law firm was hired again by another savings and loan, Home Federal Savings and Loan, in another suit against Lassiter. This suit paralleled that of First Americans. Home Federal was seeking a $4.6 million suit against Lassiter and Company, again for unauthorized trading. King Betts was the president of Home Federal. He said that he hired Hillary's firm because the cases were so similar. The government took over Home Federal soon afterward and continued the case. Meanwhile, Thomas Mars, one of the attorneys who had worked with Foster and Hillary in the first suit against Lassiter, left Hillary's firm. Months later, he started representing Lassiter against Home Federal, which was still represented by Hillary's firm. Are you dizzy yet? Don't worry, folks. It gets even better. This roller coaster ride is going to put your stomach right up in the top of your head, I guarantee it. Neither Mars nor Hillary's firm notified Home Federal about this glaring conflict of interest. Betts says he was also never told about Lassiter's ties to the Clintons. Foster, Hillary's partner, advised Betts to accept a $250,000 out-of-court settlement on the $4.6 million case, and they took it. So Hillary saved Lassiter's neck while representing the government against him, and after he had done time for dealing cocaine. Of course, Lassiter had paid off Roger Clinton's cocaine debt, had hired Roger Clinton, was Bill Clinton's protege in business, let him use his jet, brought him in to attend wild orgasmic parties where the cocaine fell like rain. The final twist in this story takes place in November 1990. Lassiter had been sentenced to 30 months in prison, but after only 4 months in a halfway house and 2 months under house arrest, Governor Bill Clinton gave Lassiter a full pardon. Lassiter is now an executive at Phoenix Mortgage Company in Little Rock. And if you've got money in that company, you better get it out quick. Now, ladies and gentlemen, during this exact same time, the chief of Clinton's personal bodyguards was in charge of the CIA's importation of drugs into the United States of America in a small airstrip in Arkansas called Mena, Arkansas. Clinton denies any knowledge of this. However, when investigators brought this to the attention of the Justice Department, it could no longer be hidden. However, the results of that investigation have not ever been released to the public. but the drugs no longer flow into the United States at Mena, Arkansas. Ollie North knows all about it because the name of Mena, Arkansas came up several times in the Iran-Contra investigations, where they were trading, ladies and gentlemen, arms for drugs, flying the drugs into the United States, selling the drugs, taking the money to finance third world insurrections, illegal wars, and, of course, the destruction of the sovereignty of nations in order to bring about their one world totalitarian socialist government. Ollie North, in his testimony, said that they had even prepared a plan to suspend the Constitution of the United States of America, yet most of you have hailed Ollie North as a great hero. Clinton was obviously and without any doubt involved in the drugs flowing into Mena, Arkansas. There is even speculation, and some evidence has been introduced, that some drugs were manufactured in Arkansas in clandestine labs and distributed from there throughout the rest of the country. Now, I cannot believe that Clinton was nominated for President of the United States. Nick Guarino can't believe that Clinton was nominated for President of the United States. Anyone who has studied Bill Clinton for even 5 minutes is absolutely amazed that he was nominated for the President of the United States. And it's even more shocking that he won the election. Nick Guarino knew Bill Clinton. He knew Arkansas politics. He knew what Bill Clinton had been involved in. How could anyone so corrupt be elected to the presidency of the United States of America? With Clinton's very flawed moral, sexual, emotional, ethical, and business character, he should have been immediately disqualified. Never mind the fact that he clearly dodged the draft, and that has been demonstrated by letters which he wrote in his own handwriting and signed himself. There's no doubt about it. And at a time when Americans were forbidden to travel to the Soviet Union, Bill Clinton was in Moscow being given the red carpet VIP treatment and was given a tour of the Kremlin, met with high-ranking Soviet officials. There is no doubt, ladies and gentlemen, that he was being groomed to bring socialism to the United States of America. Was he a KGB agent, as many people claim? I say it doesn't matter, for at the highest levels, the KGB and the CIA are the same organization. And it shouldn't take too big of a brain to figure that out. The Cold War was a scam. London and Wall Street created the Soviet Union. And Chase Manhattan Bank has had a branch in the Kremlin for over 50 years, ladies and gentlemen. Do you realize that for the first time in our history, a man was running for president while he had been referred for a criminal investigation and possible criminal indictment by an independent federal agency, and the press didn't even discuss it? The fact that the Resolution Trust Corporation would send a criminal referral to the United States Attorney in Arkansas meant there was enough evidence to suggest Clinton had committed numerous federal crimes and would be convicted by a jury of his peers. The 21-page document prepared in the fall of 1992 targeted the Madison failure. It specifically named Bill, Hillary, and current Arkansas Governor Jim Guy Tucker, as well as McDougal and other Clinton cronies. It said they were principals and benefited from the activities of shell corporations created by McDougal. It also said that while there was not yet enough evidence to prove the Clintons and Tucker knew about suspected check kiting and account overdrafts authorized by McDougal, they stood to benefit from such activities. Officials of two separate federal agencies, the RTC and the SBA, were recommending a criminal investigation of the activities of Clinton and his cronies. The RTC officials felt so strongly about this referral that they issued a second one after the first request had been squashed. this referral again named Clinton. The SBA and the RTC strongly recommend proceeding with it even today. The allegations of Clinton's criminal activities have been suppressed. The public has not been allowed to see the details of the criminal referrals. If Clinton were innocent, these documents could prove it. But Bill says the public is not entitled to see them. This from a president who promised an open and honest administration, but like all socialists, he is a liar. Clinton was nominated for president because of a freak situation, they think. Bush was so popular after Desert Storm that everyone, even the Democrats, thought his re-election was a shoe-in. Everyone except me and the listeners of this broadcast, because I told you who was going to be elected, a man that none of you knew anything about. Most of you never heard of him, William Clinton. None of the front runners in the Democratic Party wanted to risk losing the election. They all panicked and jumped ship. Now, that's what the public is supposed to think, ladies and gentlemen. The truth is, the Bilderberg Group meeting in Baden-Baden, Germany in 1991, the most powerful men and women in the world met and chose Bill Clinton to be the next president of the United States. And as soon as my intelligence reports came to me that this was their decision, I announced on the air, on this broadcast, that William Clinton would win the election, no doubt about it. There was no need to even consider another candidate winning. And he took the election. You see, George Bush also knew the decision of the Bilderberg Group, and that's why he did not campaign. H. Ross Perot also knew the decision of the Bilderberg Group, and that's why he campaigned to split the conservative vote and then backed out. And that's why Pat Buchanan went around the country taking votes away from conservative candidates also. They split the conservative vote to ensure that candidate Bill Clinton would fulfill the wishes of the most powerful, richest men and women in the world. And the only place you heard about it was on the hour of the time. At first, it didn't look like Clinton had a chance, folks. Most of you never heard of him. Most of you never checked into his background. Most of you never asked any questions. Especially if you were a Democrat or a liberal or a socialist. But the months passed and the excitement of the Gulf War died down. Public sentiment began to focus on our economic woes at home. George Bush failed to campaign. And Clinton was promising a new social order that would end all our worries. Americans believed him because they were desperate. We were in a recession and sinking deeper. Truth is, it was a depression. Many, including some Republicans, blamed Bush. They wanted anyone who promised better times. The real culprit is the Federal Reserve. They can create depressions, recessions, inflation, anything they want, any time they want, and the president is powerless to stop it. Clinton was making the promise that the public wanted to hear, and the public, you, the sheeple, were unwilling to see his flaws. At any mention of his unsavory past, Clinton's spin doctor's creed, diversions, and cried foul. And you, the sheeple, let him get away with it. Americans forgot something about elections. They're supposed to be smear campaigns. They're supposed to sling mud. If the candidates have dirty laundry, we should see it. It has to come out. And that's when it should come out. And that's the only way we can judge the candidate's most important quality, and that is character. If a man lies to his wife, he's going to lie to you. If he cheats on her every chance he gets, he'll cheat on you. If he steals from the constituents of his home state, he'll steal from you. If he can be bought for money, he has no principles. Instead of a question of whether he'll sell out his country, it's only a question of how much and when. And if a man is willing to do anything to get power, all can let it sink in. Over 28 people closely associated with Bill Clinton have died. Some have been murdered, some have been beaten to death, some have died supposedly of suicide, but they have died. The odds against that happening in such a short time are incalculable. Impossible. Vincent Foster, found dead in a little-known Washington park. Supposedly committed suicide, but all of the clues point to the fact that he was murdered somewhere else and brought there, and that he was murdered execution style. And guess what? The homicide investigation was conducted by the park police, who know absolutely nothing about conducting homicide investigations, and that's why his body was deposited there. So no legitimate homicide investigation would be conducted because the park police had jurisdiction and no one else had jurisdiction and no one else was allowed to investigate. And you all bought it. You all bought it. Bill Clinton is the most dangerous political figure of this century. We have not seen so much corruption, immorality, and cynical contempt for his fellow man and a head of state since Stalin. And Stalin also was a Marxist, a socialist, a communist. And so is Bill Clinton, and so is his wife, Hillary. They have been linked, not by me, folks, although, in our follow-up investigation, we found that the links are true, but by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, they have been linked to Marxist terrorist groups. Hillary, during her whole life, has been a supporter of socialism and has been linked directly to financial support of Marxist terrorist groups. Yet the American public don't want to hear this. Don't want to hear it. Clinton's contempt permeates everything he does. How many of you have noticed that sleazy little stupid smile that he always has on his face, even when he's talking about something tragic? It never goes away. It is a symbol of contempt. It is the outward display of what he's really thinking inside. There's a sucker born every minute. That's what he's really thinking inside. I always get the feeling that he can't really believe he's where he's at. And he gives himself the credit, even though very little of the credit belongs to Bill Clinton. As an Oxford schoolmate, Jackson, an honorable man, said of him, Clinton derives pleasure from manipulating and deceiving people, and how well we've learned that. He said he had kept silent about Clinton for years, but, quote, it just seemed too serious a thing that the American people would elect him as their leader, unquote. This is the stuff dictators are made out of. Bill Clinton believes the greatest lie of all, that the end justifies the means. And isn't that what those who call themselves the Illuminati believe? Fraud, deception, obstruction of justice, possibly even conspiracy to murder, maybe even murder itself, all to win the presidency. He has put himself above the law. With the investigations pending in the RTC and SBA and a criminal referral waiting to be acted on in Arkansas, Clinton should have been exposed and deposed of easily. But his spin doctors, professional liars, were brilliant. They were able to keep the American people and the Republican Party from learning crucial facts about Clinton that they had a right to know. And Bush's campaign people must have been asleep at the wheel, you think? No, not at all. Bush was not supposed to win, and so he didn't. Bush is a team player, if you haven't figured that out. Now, these facts, folks, if known, would surely have cost Clinton the election. But Clinton made sure they were covered up. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in providing non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets that can be used to protect your wealth, what you've worked for all your life and accumulated, what protects your family against economic instability or collapse. Now, if you don't have your assets, your money, your savings, your property covered at least in part by something that has proven throughout the centuries to hold its value in total economic collapse, then you are doing your loved ones and yourself a great disservice. I want you to call our sponsors tonight. I don't care if you patronize them or someone else. I hope that if you derive real worth from the Hour of the Time, that you would show your loyalty by patronizing our sponsor. However, if you choose to go somewhere else, the important thing is that you do it. But call them tonight. Call Swiss America Trading. Mention my name, William Cooper, and ask for the free newsletters and written material that you need to see. You need to read this material. You're entitled to it as a listener to the Hour of the Time. Make sure that you investigate the means that they have available that you can protect your assets, because, folks, we're headed for a great fall. I've been warning you for some time now, and it's getting closer all the time. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. And while you're at it, thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. RTC's criminal referral that mentioned Bill and Hillary was sent to Charles Banks, United States Attorney in Little Rock, on October 7, 1992, less than a month before the election. Banks' chief assistant, Mac Dotson, immediately sent an urgent report to top United States Justice Department lawyers. He said the Clintons were named as possible beneficiaries of McDougal's criminal activities in the referral. Dotson wrote that he believed further criminal investigation is warranted. This should have led to an immediate criminal investigation. It's standard procedure. If it were you, you would have been arrested and thrown in jail. And the American people should have been told that the Democratic nominee for president who was leading the polls might be a criminal who could soon come under indictment. But former United States Attorney General William P. Barr says he did not find out about the urgent report until just before the election. The United States Attorney's Office in Little Rock apparently concealed the RTC criminal referral from him. It has been revealed that the Little Rock office failed to put the referral into the computer reporting systems. If they had done so, the referral would have been brought to the attention of senior officials. But by the time the Attorney General did find out, it was too late. Clinton won the election. Barr was soon removed from his post, and the referral died. RTC field officials must be very convinced that the Clintons were involved in criminal activity with McDougal, because they have issued new referrals with even stronger documentation, and that is also withheld from the public. Again, the referrals named Clinton, Hillary, Tucker, McDougal, and Ward, as well as numerous other big borrowers and Madison officials.
This is highly unusual. Once a referral like this is dropped, it usually stays dropped. But they have the assistance also of the Central Intelligence Agency in suppressing this information. For if the investigation were righteously pursued, it would lead directly to the doorstep of the Central Intelligence Agency. The field officials who issued the referral have even gone so far as to appeal to top RTC brass in Washington for guidance, but Washington has refused to intervene. It's not surprising Clinton fired the head of the RTC last year and replaced him temporarily with his old college roommate, Roger Altman, another crony. Altman, who is also Deputy Treasury Secretary, working for the International Monetary Fund under the United Nations, has refused to take any action against his good friend. Altman was supposed to fill the RTC spot for only 1 month while Clinton nominated a full-time replacement. Congress had already stated that they would not approve Altman for the permanent post because of his obvious conflicts of interest. This from Congress! But a year later, with the criminal allegations still unanswered, uninvestigated, and languishing, no permanent RTC chief has been named yet. And I venture to tell you that none will be. Clinton has filled Washington with his loyal cronies, and they're all protecting him. At the Treasury Department, he has Janet Reno, who cooperated in suppressing Whitewater documents and refused for months to conduct an investigation into Whitewater. At the RTC has his old college buddy, Roger Altman. At the FBI has Louis Frisch, who was handpicked by White House Counsel Bernard Nussbaum. And I think I said Treasury Department for Janet Reno. I meant to say Justice Department. I hope you will forgive me. In Arkansas, he has his new United States Attorney, Paula Casey. When Clinton's friend Altman refused to follow up on his RTC field officials' referrals, they were sent her in Arkansas, and this was October 1993. Casey, who was a Clinton appointee, campaign volunteer, and former student of Clinton's at the University of Arkansas, got the job after Janet Reno fired Charles Banks, the previous United States Attorney. It was rumored that Banks had been about to issue subpoenas on Whitewater Madison. Casey, Clinton's hand-picked choice, refused to act on the criminal referral. Socialists are liars, deceivers, and if they remain in power, they will strip us of all of our liberties. You watch. On October 27, 1993, a stack of new referrals on her desk, Casey finally responded to 6 months of RTC inquiries on the fate of their first referral, then a year old. She told the RTC she concurred with the Justice Department's decision to forego an investigation due to insufficient information. She lied. Days later, in the wake of news reports about the latest RTC referrals and question about her ties to Clinton and other senior Democrats in the case, Casey rescued herself from further involvement. That is, she removed herself from the case. But Clinton's buddies, dear listeners, aren't going to be able to protect him indefinitely. The House and Senate have recently both passed legislation authorizing a Watergate-style special prosecutor, and these bills need to be reconciled in conference committee, and you need to call your congressmen, your representatives, and your senators and insist that this be done and that no stops be allowed. Robert Fisk, Clinton's hand-picked special prosecutor, has been so overwhelmed by the evidence that he requested and received a special grand jury in Little Rock to investigate the allegations against Clinton. This is the first time in the history of the United States that any president has ever faced a grand jury. But it will take a special prosecutor with subpoena and prosecutorial power, independent of the White House, to get the truth out, and he's going to have to be a man solid within himself, confident, at peace with God. For he will be intimidated. He will know about the 28 dead bodies littered about Bill Clinton. It will take a very special person to be able to deal with the fear that will come with this job. It's going to happen. Clinton is going to be the first president to go straight from the White House to jail. The presidency will come down. A key player in the sordid affairs of Whitewater and Bill Clinton's rise to power is Vincent Foster. Foster worked at the Rose Law Firm, where along with Hillary and Webster Hubble, he was a senior partner. Foster, dear listeners, was a fixer. He was deeply involved in the Clintons' SNL scams and cover-ups. He was the one who conned the FDIC into hiring Hillary to sue the auditors of her former client, Madison Guarantee, that was paying her $2,000 a month retainer. Hillary and Foster convinced the FDIC to settle its $60 million case for $1 million. They also forgave a $600,000 loan to Seth Ward, father-in-law of one of their partners at Rose. Rose's fee was $400,000. Foster was also a key attorney, again with Hillary, in getting drug dealer Dan Lassiter off the hook and two other multi-million dollar SNL scandals. Lassiter was being sued by the FDIC for $7.9 million. Hillary and Foster, while representing the government, got him off for $450,000. And when the chief of Clinton's personal security was found operating a large drug importation business in Mena, Arkansas, Foster covered up for the Clintons on that one, too. These scams cost the American taxpayers at least minimum, because nobody can really tell, minimum $60 million. Well, they made a small fortune for Hillary, Foster, Lassiter, and their other cronies. It's also been reported by reliable witnesses that Foster and Hillary were lovers. Former law enforcement officials state that on numerous occasions they saw Foster and Hillary passionately embracing. They often spent weekends together at the Rose Law Firm's secluded cabin. When Hillary filed for divorce against Bill in 1986, Foster, the man she called her closest friend, was there for her. Foster played a key role in getting Clinton elected president. He proved the Clintons lost money in Whitewater by hiring longtime Clinton associate attorney James Lyons to lead up an independent audit. Clinton rewarded Lyons by naming him to a prestigious U.S. government advisory panel seeking peace in Ireland. This audit has come under heavy fire. And our opinion, my opinion, Nick Guarino's opinion, many of our chief CAGI operatives across this country, it was worthless. An entire year's worth of records were missing, and the auditors ignored countless documents, but Foster's ruse worked. When Whitewater was brought up during the campaign, Clinton pointed to the independent CPA audit that showed he had lost $68,900, the audit that had no records to audit. The press bought the story because they wanted to see their liberal, Marxist, socialist scumbag hero in the White House. Their dream of destroying the sovereignty of the United States and bringing about their new world order could be realized very quickly. After he was elected president, Clinton appointed Foster as deputy White House counsel. Foster was also acting as the Clintons' personal attorney, which should have been a conflict of interest. But his real job was to bury Bill and Hillary's sordid past, and especially Whitewater, as deep as he could. And of course, there are the clandestine meetings with Hillary, over which several Secret Service agents are said to have quit their job. And because of other allegations involving Bill and women that they were required to bring in to the White House for him. It's on record. The problem was Whitewater wouldn't stay buried. Foster had been on the job only a few months, yet more and more damaging news kept coming out in the press about the phony losses, the tax returns that were never filed, the paperwork that was missing, Clinton's ties to McDougal, the missing money. Instead of getting hushed up, the whole affair was getting worse. And now, because of this broadcast, they can never bury it. For what the traditional press has hidden from the public, I have revealed. And every month, new investigations keep springing up on scandals that Foster was supposed to have handled. The RTC had sent a second request to the Justice Department in its ever-expanding criminal investigation of Bill and Hillary Clinton. It was clear this one wasn't simply going away. Travelgate. The sham deal in the White House travel office was coming unglued. FBI Director William Sessions was enraged that Clinton was trying to use the FBI to cover up his Travelgate and Whitewater messes. When Waco broke out, he was forbidden to travel to the scene and was eventually fired. The FBI was about to uncover the SBA Hale-Whitewater connection. Hale, a Clinton appointee, charged that Clinton had forced him to give fraudulent SBA loans worth millions to his cronies. The last straw came when Sessions issued a subpoena for Hale's documents, including papers related to Whitewater. That same day, Clinton fired Sessions, the first time ever an FBI director has been dismissed. Hillary was in deep trouble over her conflicts of interest in insider trading of healthcare stocks. The Whitewater cover-up was falling apart. McDougal had gone to an attorney in Little Rock and made a taped statement, quote, "I could sink it." Rumors came to him that the Washington Times was going to publish an exposé of his sordid past. McDougal had said, "I could sink it quicker than they could lie about it. If I could get any position so I wouldn't have my head beaten off, and Bill knows that," unquote. Another scandal, the illegal search of confidential State Department documents by Clinton officials, was about to explode. Clinton desperately needed ammunition to blackmail his political enemies as the Whitewater scandal unfolded. The State Department Office of Investigation was demanding criminal action be taken against Clinton aides for these crimes. Clinton had a serious problem, folks. Foster knew all of the Clintons' dirty deals. He knew where the bodies were buried. He was party to many of them and was the hatchet man in charge of covering them up. Other than Hillary, Foster was the only person alive who knew the intimate details. And if what he knew ever came out, Clinton would get impeached. And it was coming out. Foster was showing signs of cracking. He knew he might be the next one targeted in the criminal indictments, and he told his brother-in-law, former Arkansas Congressman Burl Anthony, that he was very worried that Congress was about to launch a probe into his affairs. Foster even retained his own personal lawyer. He wrote, quote, "No one will believe the Clintons are innocent," unquote. Foster had become a danger to the president. He knew too much. He could not be allowed to live. And while we cannot prove what I am going to tell you next, these events are pieced together from circumstantial evidence that we have accumulated. On July 20th, 1993, Foster's worst nightmare came true. A shocking phone call told him the FBI was about to issue subpoenas for David Hale. Foster knew Hale would crack and lead them to Tucker, Smith, Madison Marketing, Castle Grande, and Whitewater. He immediately rose from his desk and had an emergency meeting with Bill Clinton. He told Clinton the SBA affair was about to be blown wide open. It wouldn't take long for them to piece together the looting of Madison. The president was going down. Foster wanted to resign. Foster wanted, folks, to resign. Clinton had a plan of his own. He told Foster to calm down, that they could handle it just as they always had. He told him to set up a meeting on Whitewater outside the White House for later that day. When Foster arrived, his assassins were waiting. They shot him in the head, drove his body to Fort Marcy, where they carefully staged Foster's suicide, and here's how they covered up the murder. First, they had to make sure none of Foster's incriminating papers were found, so contrary to standard police procedure, Foster's office was not immediately sealed. Instead, Chief White House Counsel Bernard Nussbaum, along with Hillary's Chief of Staff Margaret Williams and Clinton aide Patsy Thomason, the one who ran Dan Lassiter's bond company while he was in the halfway house, entered the office just hours after Foster was found. His body wasn't even cold, folks. They spent 2 hours rifling through his office, taking out the sensitive documents on Whitewater and Travelgate. Those documents have never been made public. And next, they had to make sure no credible law enforcement agency would investigate Foster's death, and especially not the FBI, so they dumped the body in a public park, and Clinton's Justice Department assigned the case to the Keystone Cops of the Park Police. The park police are normally in charge of crowd control. In the politically charged death of a key government official, they don't know what to do, and this was proved by the incredible way they bungled the investigation. Other than the autopsy, no sophisticated investigation was done until much later. Though it's standard procedure to make the autopsy public 6 months later, that still has not happened. Good night. God bless you all, and may God save this republic.